Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Yeah, I always, enjoy this when they say, well, why won't you put a plan forward? And that's what we hear from the Prime Minister all of the time, is why won't these Conservative Premiers and the one Liberal that he forgets about put a plan forward? Well, many people that get behind that argument, many of them in the media world, they've been sipping from the royal chalice for just a little too long. What the Prime Minister means by that is put a plan forward like his. So put your own carbon tax forward and then he will remove his. Well, the problem isn't who's charging the carbon tax. The problem is that it's there in the first place. It isn't working to reduce emissions. It's costly for families. It's costly for business. It's upsetting our investment environment as identified by the Bank of Canada.
A lot of the politicians have been sipping from the golden chalice far too long. Well, they're going to be sipping from the golden chalice even more tomorrow because their salaries are going up. The base salary for a member of parliament is going to be $203,000 and change. Now, if you're a cabinet minister, you get an additional $96,000. So you're right around $200,000. And if you're an opposition leader, you get more than that. If you're a committee chair, and there's so many of them, they get a lot of money too. And the Prime Minister, Mr. Trudeau's salary, will reach $403,000 a year. We'll get more on this later on the program today. Now, we've talked a lot about the Bank of Canada on this program and in this country, particularly over the last 2 years. I can't recall a time where we spent as much previously, spent as much time talking about the Bank of Canada. And it's had to do with the inflation and the interest rates, and we were held in total suspense as to what the Bank of Canada was going to be doing next. We know that 40% of us, 40% of Canadians have difficulty sleeping at night thinking about their financial well-being. And that was from last year's RBC Financial Well-Being Survey, 40%. And if you look at millennials aged 27 to 42, the number losing sleep jumps from 40% to 53%. These are not great times. And then, I know you've been paying attention to this, we've talked about it, the senior deputy governor of the Bank of Canada, Carolyn Rogers, last Tuesday said, "You've seen those signs that say, in case of emergency, break glass. Well, it's time to break the glass." Let's talk about where we are, what's happening as far as the Bank of Canada is concerned, what we can expect. Our great friend, Dr. Eric Kam, macroeconomics professor at Toronto Metropolitan University, is back with us. Dr. Kam, how are you?
Roy, I'm doing well, and a happy, healthy Easter to you and all of the listeners.
Well, happy, healthy, yeah, I can say it, Easter to you as well, Passover. And we had a new name for it, though. Veterans Affairs Canada called it something else, the March season. I have to look that up because it's just so annoying. Okay, let's get at the Bank of Canada from this perspective. We have the senior deputy governor saying, "You've seen those signs that say, in the case of emergency, break glass." Well, it's time to break the glass. We're in a national emergency situation. What is she, in layman's terms, Dr. Kam, telling us?
Well, I'm going to tell you what she's saying in layman's terms, and you're not going to like it, but it's consistent with the theme over the last couple of years. How many times have you and I discussed when the bank or other public sector institutions, Roy, say, "Don't look over here, look over here"? So this is just another case for me of the Bank of Canada telling the economies, and I say that because I'm using the different provincial economies because they're all a little bit different, that we've got some rough waters ahead. For those people in Ontario, they saw the most recent budget given by the Conservative government. Parenthetically, it was the least conservative budget I've ever seen in my entire life, but we can get back to that. I think what Ms. Rogers is doing is she's saying, in a sense, the demand side of our economy that you and I have been discussing for years, the demand side, interest rates, spending, government spending, consumption, we're losing the battle. We're not gaining anywhere. There are not less people losing sleep. GDP is not rising like it should. So what should we do? Well, Ms. Rogers says, get off of the demand side that the bank can actually control. Let's look at the supply side, Roy. Let's look at the supply side of the economy, which we can't control. So I can say, there's your problem. There's what we have to target. But don't call me, because I do demand management. Call the supply side people, Roy. But don't get it mixed up, Ms. Rogers says. Don't call my extension. That's not my office.
She's doing us a service by saying what she said. She's requiring people to pay attention. And we've talked about this. The OECD says Canada will, for the next 36 years until 2060, be the laggard and post the worst economic performance among advanced nations as far as real per capita GDP is concerned. That's something that should worry us as well. So if we can go, this is the supply side I think I'm talking about now. The Greek prime minister was here last week. What was he looking for, Professor Cam? He was looking for Canadian exports of LNG to his country, which could then act as a hub for further distribution to our European allies. He was sent home empty-handed, as the German chancellor and Japanese prime minister before him were also sent home. What are we doing? We have this amazing supply of fossil fuel energy that the world needs and is going to use for decades to come, whether we supply it or not, and we're just determined, or at least this government is determined, to leave it in the ground and not make it available, even when heads of state come here and are willing to make, I'm sure, a very profitable for us arrangement if we'll only provide them with what they need. They don't get it from us. They'll get it from somewhere else.
Well, and that's very true. And that's the problem. So to back up for a second, I do like what Ms. Rogers said, as much as I think there's a bit of a nefarious element, but it does get us to look at something that we don't see very often, which is the supply side, which is productivity. Now, we can, to the good listenership, we can measure productivity in many different ways, but really, it's just economic output per hour worked. Or in other words, how efficient is our labor force, and by extension, how efficient are our businesses and our economy? And so I think this does dovetail well into what you're talking about, Roy, because we do have an excess supply of these staples and energy and natural gas and fuel, and yet we do decide to leave it into the ground. So as I always say, in the first chapter of every economic textbook, we talk about opportunity cost and comparative advantage. Canada has both of those things in our resource sector, and we choose not to use them. And now, just as an addition to what Ms. Rogers said, I said about output per labor, that seems pretty simple. So you think to yourself, well, how should we do that as an economy? I like the expression by Paul Krugman, who won the Nobel Prize. He said a few years ago, productivity isn't everything, but in the long run, it's almost everything. And so when you go back and look at how can you increase the supply side in an economy, if you have essentially punted on the demand side, you have to look at things like increased competition, skills development, smarter research and development. And then my favorite one, really the low-hanging fruit of the bunch, is to start eliminating the things that cause gross inefficiencies. And that's a fancy way of saying stop the insanity of bloating the public sector and maybe go back to the first three of those prescriptions and start to deal with the private sector. But your point is well taken. What's going on in the energy sector is symptomatic of all of the sectors. Competition, skills development, research and development funding, we're not going in that direction. We are kicking the same can down the road and then expecting a different result. And we know, Roy, that's just the definition of insanity.
Well, it isn't. Are we not also creating a negative mindset for the very people who should not be thinking negatively? And I'm talking about the young people in our society, the entrepreneurs of tomorrow, the career-seeking youth of tomorrow. They're here today. They're hearing all of this. We're certainly not doing them any favors, and we're not creating the kind of climate for them. I use the word climate advisedly. We're not creating the climate for them to really start thinking positively with all of this negative news that's swirling around them.
No, and in fact, there's a theory for that too. It's called the economics of self-fulfilling prophecies. The more that you tell the younger generation that they can work as hard as they want, but they're not going to come ahead in an economic sense, or at least be as well off as or better than their parents, well, they start to believe it. And there you go. And it starts the cycle again. And that's when people start to bail out on education and they start leaving the country and going to a country that they believe offers more in the way of opportunity. So to summarize our conversation, Roy, on this lovely Sunday, the demand side of our economy has been in trouble for a long time. Now the supply side is catching up in terms of being in trouble. And as I've said before, we can't win at home. We can't win on the road, Roy, and we're running out of places to play.
Yeah, that's so true. I really appreciate the Senior Deputy Governor of the Bank of Canada's statement, Carolyn Rogers, because it's such an effective visual. We've all seen this safety equipment behind glass, and on the glass it reads, in case of emergency, break glass. Well, it's time to break the glass. There's no way to misinterpret that. Professor Cam, there's another story that I saw earlier in the week, and it really caught my attention. And that is, and I'm sure you can explain this to us, how this could be happening. The U.S. Federal Bank last week, I read, indicated it may be agreeable to accepting higher inflation and for longer periods of time, which runs counter to everything we've heard, at least from our bank, our central bank, over the last, 2 years. What are they doing?
You know what they're doing is they're moving into the modern era, Roy. There used to be a real school of thought that inflation and unemployment were trade-offs, and that effectively you could fight one, but you had to give up on the other. And they called that theory the Phillips curve, and it worked for odd periods of time in some countries. But what the United States has realized is that inflation at low, moderate, predictable levels is not a bad thing. And in fact, it is one of the results of a growing economy. I know that after the pandemic, what happened to the price level was absolutely criminal to Canadians and Americans, for that matter, that are trying to just maintain their standard of living. But what's gone on in Canada, as we know, is this absolute holy war that we are going to bring down the inflation rate to 2% and the hell with whatever else has to give to get us there. And so what you're seeing is that whatever has to give now is both the demand side and the supply side of the economy. Our government's kind of given up on helping us increase our disposable income, and it's kind of given up on helping us increase our natural resource exports and the supply side. The United States, people ask me all the time, number one question, why are they doing better than us? It's because they've let go of old ideals and old beliefs that don't really work anymore. And it's time to stop blaming the pandemic, right? It's over and it's in the past. We have to deal now with the economic realities that inflation, again, positive, low, predictable, that is the sign of a growing, almost thriving economy. But our government sector doesn't want to abide by this. They have their beliefs and they are pigheaded and we're not going to move them. And so anybody sitting there waiting for the interest rate to fall is kidding themselves. Nothing is going to happen until this government magically gets to that 2%. Which I have to tell you, I don't see anytime soon. And I guess that's why it just makes me sad, because all of this is done on the backs of the taxpayers when there's just such a better way to go, but we don't want to see it, Roy.
Look, this government is going to be unmagically removed from power in the foreseeable future. I think we can be quite sure of that. Daryl Bricker from Ipsos told us yesterday, when I asked if there was any way that they could recover from the hole they're in now, he really doesn't see that as a possibility. But I can't let you go in the 2 minutes we have left. We've been talking about the carbon tax yesterday and today, particularly because this is the weekend leading up to the carbon tax rise tomorrow. So would you share with us, please, what your thoughts are on increasing the carbon tax? And then please share with us, in the time we have left, what happens to financially stressed Canadians now?
Well, my answer to that is consistent. I've been saying that they've got to put this carbon tax on the shelf for a long time. And of course, that's not because I don't believe in clean air. Everybody believes in clean air. Everybody believes in lots of wonderful things that I think that you can address when your economy is on a positive trajectory. But our economy, the Canadian economy, Roy, unlike the US, is right now pointed downward. And when an economy is pointed downward, all of its productive resources should be put into changing that arrow. And there are lots of ways to do it. We don't seem at all committed to any of them. But I could start really, really quickly that if I put that carbon tax, if I announce tonight that, you know, fellow Canadians, I've seen what's going on with our taxpayers. Far too many people are too close to insolvency, one paycheck away from being homeless, unable to feed and house their children. If you put a stop to it tonight, you automatically, by definition, put money into people's pockets. And to the few people walking around that I've ever bumped into that say, yes, but at a cost of clean air, I ask you, is the cost of cleaner air right now, knowing how little we pollute with respect to the entire world, is the cost of clean air worth putting people on the street? Because that's what you're doing, Roy. Economics at its core is about choices. And the choices this government is making right now is to bull ahead with a mission that is going to make so many people financially worse off. But they've chosen that. I would not, as you know. I would scrap this tax. I would scrap a few taxes and give people a fighting chance.
And we're minor contributors to the overall issue of emissions. This country is. But you said something a moment ago that I really twigged to. We used to say people are two paychecks away from being homeless. And you quite correctly said, and I've heard this and talked to experts about it, there are significant numbers of people, large numbers of people, who are literally now one missed paycheck away from being homeless. That's an issue that we must address. We cannot continue to live with growing tent cities. This is just absolutely repulsive that is going on in this wealthy country that we're allowing it to go on. Professor Cam, always great to have you join us. Time goes by way too quickly. Thanks for today.
Happy Easter, Roy. Stay healthy.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.